What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
Welcome to the Katie Halper Show. On this episode, I play an interview with Abby Martin, the creator and host of The Empire Files, co-host of the Media Roots podcast, a visual artist, a filmmaker who directed the amazing documentary Gaza Fights for Freedom, and perhaps most importantly, she's been accused by the U.S. government of, quote, fomenting radical discontent, end quote. It's a really great chat, and we talk about why she's suing the state of Georgia, which basically tried to censor her over BDS, which, by the way, stands for Boycott, Divest, Sanction. Find out more about Abby at abbymartin.com and follow her on Twitter at Abby Martin. My co-host is Leslie Lee, host of the Struggle Session podcast, and you can follow him on Twitter at Leslie Lee III. Please rate and review the podcast, and please become Patreon supporters at patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. This week's Patreon-only episode is a chat with Leslie Lee and then with journalist Aaron Mate about certain statements that AOC made about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Hello, and welcome to The Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper, and you know who's here with me, co-hosting like a machine, Leslie Lee.
Hi, Katie. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thanks for coming on.
Of course. Of course. Every Thursday here. Of course, you can catch me on Struggle Session, patreon.com/strugglesession or sesh.plus. But I'm always happy to be here on Thursday nights with Katie Halper.
Yeah. I'm going to have to beat you to the punch next time. Plug mine before. we're just getting, actually, just want to make sure that our guests got the right email. Let me just do that. And you know what, Leslie? This is a perfect time for you to shine. I'm going to tell people, though, who our guest is. And that very guest is Abby Martin.
Yes.
Leslie, why don't you, tell people why you like Abby Martin while I make sure that Abby Martin got the email.
I mean, Abby Martin is, you know, one of the fiercest, you know, and bravest journalists there is. Their work has been so influential to me and to my own politics and political awakening. I'm so grateful for her voice. And also, you know, I've had the opportunity to meet her actually at the live Katie Halper taping in a few years ago. And it's the most inspirational conversation I've ever had in my life. You know, this is just someone who's so passionate about all the right things. And, you know, I have so much absolute respect for him.
Nothing but respect. And you know what? It's that kind of those good vibes that got it so that she thought she didn't get the email, but she did. Again,
okay.
This is just, I'm going to say it once, I'm going to say it again. You don't get this with every show.
Yeah.
So you're welcome.
In fact, it seemed weird because I was looking at my Gmail waiting, and it didn't pop up until like 15 minutes after the date. So I don't know if there was just something wrong with the with Gmail today, or they're suppressing your voice specifically.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, that's a little naive of you to assume it's a Gmail problem as opposed to, you know, a Katie Halper problem. Which is, I think, what it is, obviously.
Yes, obviously. They're trying to take you out.
Yeah. And then tonight, I mean, forget it. Especially double threat, triple threat, quadruple threat when we got Abby Martin.
Oh, yes. I mean, joking aside, she is, you know, has literally been silenced by government, by multiple Republicans and Democrats, local, state, federal, as
every
well
level.
As tech companies, just everything.
Yeah, and we're going to talk to her about that tonight, actually. And we're gonna pick a fight, I think. Or Leslie, you already picked a fight. Tell us about what happened.
So very briefly. So I know we've been talking about the Snyder Cut. I've been catching up your audience on this, and there was a big article this week, and they probably heard about it because it was pretty big entertainment news.
They probably heard about it. You mean from the show, and that's why they're talking about it.
From the show. Uh-huh. But there was a big article in the Hollywood Reporter. Where they talk to Ray Fisher, who was the actor who was kind of at the center of some of the controversy, who spoke out against some of the abusive behavior by Joss Whedon on the set, as well as the complicity of Geoff Johns and Walter Hamada in this. And they both ended up being, you know, promoted basically after this, while Whedon ended up fired. And his thing was like, I don't want it to be just about Whedon. Other people were complicit in this, right. And I want to speak out. And so the Hollywood Reporter gave a big interview with him. And, you know, his big real beef is kind of with Geoff Johns, who is this big wig at Warner Brothers, used to write comic books, right? And moved his way up the ladder until he was in, you know, basically that almost like at the top of all the DC movies, right? And, you know, we've talked about the Snyder Cut before, but my problem with the article was basically this. She lets, you know, Ray Fisher tell his story about, you know, the racism in his face and basically how he was very reasonable in his complaints and his pushback on certain things. There's a couple of, you know, very interesting details here. And basically Geoff Johns does end up looking like an absolute villain because there's a story. And this hit, you know, big today that Geoff Johns personally blocked a black actor from being cast in the lead of a TV show because he didn't think that because the character is supposed to be Superman's grandfather. So he said, well, a black guy basically can't play that part because fans are going to expect his grandfather to look like Henry Cavill, which is an obvious lie because fans like don't care. It's TV show versus movies, et cetera, et cetera. But my problem kind of with the article and the person who wrote it is that they at the last minute, Geoff Johns, who Ray Fisher criticized, he does the thing that all of the accused people do. They wait till the very last minute to respond to the inquiry. And so what the writer did was instead of fact checking his responses, she put his you know, response that his PR person sent out against all these accusations and just basically kind of pasted them in the article without any pushback. And the problem is, like, if you had actually fact checked any of his comments, you would see very clearly that he's lying about this stuff. Like numerous ones of his defenses. If you just Googled what he said, you would see that he was lying about this. But the writer of the article sadly did not. And when I made this big thread just detailing all the inaccuracies and lies. Like, for example, he claims that he claims that he's an ally because he helped, he co-wrote a comic that introduced Batwoman, who was the first, you know, lesbian superhero, first major lesbian superhero.
Catwoman's a lesbian?
Batwoman.
Batwoman, sorry.
Batwoman. True, but he didn't actually co-write the comic. The comic was an anthology series with five writers, and we know the writer who wrote Batwoman, and it wasn't him. He just claimed to have written this character that he did not write, and in fact, under his leadership, DC botched this character so bad. She was the hottest character in comic books, but they delayed her introducing her title for like a year, partially under his leadership, and the creative team who actually created the character quit in protest because leadership at DC, including Geoff Johns, he was in the leadership. He wasn't directly implicated in this, but he was over the person who did this. They wouldn't let her get married. They wouldn't let Kat, the lesbian superhero, marry her girlfriend. And so, like, they quit in protest about this. And this was around the time where gay marriage was literally like a hot button still a hot button issue in culture. So they were trying to do something really, you know, progressive and forward thinking. And they had gotten DC all this positive press because the press really latched on to Batwoman in a way that DC didn't expect. And he lies about creating her. And also, like, the article, if the person who had fact checked this, they would notice that actually Batwoman is kind of a black eye for DC Comics, because they had this great character that people loved, but they botched it, and the people who created them ended up quitting in protest. So, like, you can't use that to the, like, the Hollywood Reporter basically, and the Hollywood Reporter person is sympathetic, is not sympathetic to Geoff Johns. She does make him look like an asshole, but because she didn't actually, because they didn't actually check the his pushback, he got to get all these lies in about all his career, which is not true. Like, for example, it's not even mentioned in the article that his primary collaborator, Ethan Van Sciver, is a white supremacist. Geoff Johns's artist, one of his primary artists on a lot of these comics, he's talking about being diverse, is an alt-right figure.
Like, well, that's diversity of diversity of thought. You got to have diversity from non-KKK people. You got to throw in a KKK person, you know.
So he wasn't, openly white supremacist at the time, but, you know, he now is. And so it's very strange that he would use this. The Hollywood Reporter wouldn't mention any of this when you have a black guy saying this guy racially, you know, treat me badly. And then they just post his, you know, defenses without, you know, any kind of fact checking, and don't mention the fact that his former collaborator is huge on the alt-right. He's like a Steven Crowder type guy.
Really?
You know, like Geoff Johns and Ethan Van Sciver wrote a lot of comics together. And, you know, it was just very poor reporting, and I just criticized it. And this is basically the response that I got. I think you'll find this interesting as a journalist. As I said, my initial comment was, you didn't, you know, nobody at the Hollywood Reporter fact checked this. And then you can just go to her post where she says, you know, well, what if, you know,
maybe
Geoff Johns didn't respond until deadline, and we weren't prepared to delay a 5K word story. And it's like, so what? If you weren't prepared to delay it, that doesn't mean you just post his takes like without fact checking. Like if Harvey Weinstein sent you some defense, Harvey Weinstein's lawyer sent you some defenses at the last minute, you don't just copy paste them in the article and hit publish. You know, you have to check that sort of thing. So that was just my issue with it, just as on a journalism perspective, the way like these narratives get told. And like, it only took me 90 minutes to like come up with all these things, and this is someone who's very powerful, very rich, very wealthy. He makes the TV shows your kids watch, you know, like, so it's worth, you know, actually diving in. Like, if you're going to be a reporter for this, you know, do your fact check. Don't just repeat what someone says. It was very strange.
Well, Kim Masters, we're going to invite you onto the show. Feel free to come on.
Well, I'd love to talk to her about it.
I know. Look, I mean, I'm not hostile. Yeah, I'll be a very fair moderator, because I have no idea what the hell you guys are talking about. So I can't have any skin in the game.
Yeah.
Although I'm learning. I'm learning. Was there any response? No, I think we're going to have to revisit this. But
she didn't respond after that. I was just like, so, like, okay, I get you're under a deadline, but, like, you're a journalist. That doesn't mean you just post whatever the government, the accused, whoever that person is, without, like, what you put is, Geoff Johns was not able to respond in time with deadline. We will update the article as when we get their response and have time to fact check it.
Well, yeah, I mean, almost as important, we have a story that's almost as important as this. Not quite. But it's a story about censorship, about free speech. Also, I'm not going to lie, I am wearing the same dress that I wore the other day, multiple days later. So I feel like, should I change? It'll take me a minute. Should I go off camera and change? No?
No, right. No. We're fighting back.
Are people going to be confused, though? Are they going to be like, I already saw this?
I don't think so.
What do you guys think?
Fix it in post. Change the color of your shirt. in the thumbnail. And then that's all you have to do.
Change the color of your shirt and your thumbnail.
That solves everything.
That solves everything. Boom. There you go. All right. And on that note, we're going to change it up a little bit by bringing in our guest. Very exciting. I'm very excited. And she's a great person, and she's a great journalist, Empire Files journalist, and her name is Abby Martin. Welcome, Abby.
What's up, guys?
How are you?
Great. I'm sad to hear Leslie advocating cancel culture in this meetup rant. Y'all, yeah. What's up with that?
Yeah.
Who are
you canceling?
Oh my god. I was like, did I smoke that much today?
No, just all this crazy shit about cancel culture.
Oh yes.
Like, no one's even talking about like what, you know, like actual government mandated
laws. Like, you're like someone who's actually has been canceled, but you're fighting back.
Fighting back, baby.
And it's good to see you. You're looking great and great setup too.
Yeah.
Thank you. I realize there's a big drop shot on me with the microphone.
Oh, because you're taping in a different place from where you usually do. I look like
I usually do podcasts without not being on camera. So
about your Empire Files bit?
Yeah, we got the dope backdrop.
Right, the backdrop, right.
Yeah.
You wear a lab.
Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
Why am I getting like more and more Morticia like? I'm lowering the lights. Do I need to raise the lights? What's going on?
Morticia?
Yeah, is that, you say that like it's really problematic. Like I'm
Morticia?
What?
You look good to me.
I don't know. I think that's golf appropriation.
You guys look great to me.
Yes.
I feel like it looks a little Jesus like. Anyway, so on to more and more.
Angelic.
Yeah, angelic, yeah. Let's just
do it in post.
Yeah, I'm doing post. Fuck it. We'll do it in post. Tell us about what is happening. You are suing the state of Georgia. Tell us why that is happening and what the status is of your case.
Yes. So I think most Americans would be completely shocked, especially a lot of people who are obsessed with this notion of cancel culture, honing in on a very serious issue, of course, of big tech censoring and purging a lot of voices that don't go along with the mainstream corporate narrative, right? And we've seen that be pretty widespread, of course, not just with Trump supporters and Trump himself, but of course, a lot of leftists and Antifa accounts and anarchists and communists and people sympathetic to countries that are deemed enemy states from the U.S. So this is obviously known and talked about quite extensively. What is not addressed as much, in fact, barely at all, and which I'm really, really thankful to be given the space on your guys' show about this, is the issue that 30 or so states, give or take, have passed loyalty, like mandated loyalty oaths to Israel in order for people to work in the state. So if you are an independent contractor, and let's say you are going to Georgia to work as a construction worker or substitute teacher or doing what I did, which was going to give a keynote speech at a university, you are given a contract saying that you must pledge to never boycott the state of Israel in order to simply make money. So basically, tens of thousands of people across the country in all of these states have forfeited their First Amendment rights in order to work in these states. This is a textbook, clear-cut example of government censorship. This is the black hand of the state coming down and censoring our First Amendment. This is like something that is just the most crystallized version of whatever cancel culture is. Right. You know what I mean? And so it's absolutely
ambiguous, totally unambiguous.
Totally and what's so crazy about this, it's like replace the word Israel with literally any other, like let's just say, like it said, like you must not ever boycott Putin or like criticize Putin, right? Engaging in BDS and like criticism of Israel. It is just beyond the pale that 30 or so states have passed such legislation and just
30?
Flagrant violation. Yeah.
Oh,
flagrant violation of our constitutional rights. And like, it's not just the free speech issue, which of course is like the issue. It's also free speech encapsulates the right to boycott. This is something that's been constitutionally protected by the Supreme Court back during the Montgomery bus boycott, back during Jim Crow. This is an example of what people can use a peaceful demonstration across the world. This is what we saw bring down apartheid in South Africa. This is a right, a tool that we have as political activists in order to help hold powers accountable. And the fact that Israel and the Israeli lobby has actually gone and undermined the U.S. Constitution, right, and sidelined our First Amendment rights and lobbied all of these states to pass these laws, and state legislatures have passed them, I think is just fucking astounding. You know, it's just such an astounding thing under the guise of anti-Semitism, fighting anti-Semitism. So anyway, my case, I was going to speak at Georgia Southern University at a media literacy conference, not even about Palestine at all. It was, very, very...
It was like a censorship and tech moderation conference, yeah.
Right, yeah. and so I was given such a contract, and I was like, obviously I can't sign this. My entire body of work advocates BDS. I just made this documentary, Gaza Fights for Freedom, which advocates BDS, Katie, which you saw with your mom.
Really good.
And so it was just incredible. And then the conference fell apart, and then I just felt totally powerless about doing anything about it. And I just tweeted out the story because I just didn't know where to go with it. And I was like, I feel like I can't do anything about this. And I just am so outraged that, you know, my voice was shut down because I wouldn't sign this loyalty oath to Israel. And also, it's really crazy that these loyalty oaths exist. And then CARE and Partnership for Civil Justice Fund reached out to me. And so we launched this lawsuit. And unfortunately, things have stalled a little bit because of COVID, but they have tried to render the case moot. They've tried to basically nullify it, bringing, and get this, they actually brought an Israeli consulate official to a committee meeting in Georgia to try to say, like, let's try to, to change the law. Basically, they brought an Israeli government official to advocate changing the law so that my case wouldn't be valid. The day after I filed the lawsuit, Netanyahu's press office, like the PM spokesperson Twitter account, actually tweeted, like, whoever boycotts us will be boycotted. We've worked really hard to pass these laws across the country, and basically threatening economic consequences for whoever doesn't go along with this. And I think that a lot of Americans would be just completely appalled that this has happened, and no one's talking about it, you guys. And like, everyone's just kind of crying about conservative censorship and, you know, bemoaning about like people on college campuses like fucking Milo Yiannopoulos getting heckled, when really, like, this is censorship.
Yeah.
This is cancel culture, like, happening. It's already happened and it continues to happen. And really, if you look at what is being cracked down the most in this country, it is pro-Palestine.
Yeah.
On behalf of a foreign country.
Yeah. And I just want to say also, as a Jew, it's really, Israel, please stop doing this. It's really embarrassing. It's a really bad look also. Like, we do not want to perpetuate the image of, like, controlling the media and stifling all criticism. Like, I mean, really, it's not a good look. So Israel, stop doing this, but you don't care because, like, obviously Netanyahu is a total opportunist who doesn't actually care about anti-Semitism, which is why he's buddies with all these, like, raging reactionary anti-Semites, like, in Poland and Hungary. And Christian Zionists, you obviously don't care either. So I guess I'm speaking to people who maybe think that there's some good faith people out there who probably don't get it and think that they're being good allies in, like, and fighting anti-Semitism. But BDS is not anti-Semitism. And if you want to get real, it's problematic and a little anti-Semitic to conflate someone's position on Israel with their position on Jews. So...
Of course, I mean, they've weaponized this to shield themselves from criticism and basically deflect all criticism to call whoever criticizes them bigots.
Right.
And it's a really, really fascinating thing that they've done. And it's really worked up until this point. I think people aren't buying it for the most part. We see, like, polls dramatically shifting. Public consciousness is obviously shifting on the issue. But the fact that, like, you know, the liberal establishment, namely and primarily, is still holding up this facade. And that's a huge problem, because this progressive except for Palestine thing doesn't work anymore.
Right. And do you have, by the way, the thing that they wanted you to sign? Do you have that available?
It's in the lawsuit. I don't have it in front of me, but it's a fascinating thing because it's like, think about how many people just sign these like who reads contracts? I just was reading it because I was bored.
Yeah, you could have come that close, right?
It's like the terms and conditions that you just sign away like 20 pages of text. You're like, whatever. like, well, I gotta make those bills, dude. And then you read it, you're like, wait, what? Like, why? Why is that?
Yeah. That is really scary.
So the Georgia law requires that anyone signing a contract valued at $1,000 or more with a state agency must sign the pledge, signed into law by Nathan Deal in 2016. So it's like even like small amounts. It's like is really like that's just so bizarre. It's like what do they think? Someone getting paid $1,000 to do something is going to do to the state of Israel that like they're not that like that's just so bizarre. That's such a bizarre thing. It really is just about like stifling any sort of like speech and like and Abby, you said you weren't really like there to talk about that. So like what if you were like what if somebody was just signing a contract to like clean clean the cafeteria? Do they have to sign? Is that in the work packet too?
Yes.
It's like by default.
Wow. So by default.
They probably, if it wasn't by default, they would probably target you because you've made that really amazing documentary in Gaza and you've reported on these issues. But yes, it's pretty scary that it's by default.
They're clearly trying to threaten. It's not even... You know, it's weird because it's like, will they actually retroactively go and like punish people who boycott Israel or advocate the boycott of Israel if they've signed this contract? I don't think so, although they very well could. And in fact, they might. But I think what this really is about is cancel culture. It's really about putting the fear of retribution, the fear of punishment. You know, and Siri keeps fucking talking to me because I have this Bluetooth headset. She's
it may not be Siri. I'm just saying,
like, Siri, Jesus Christ.
I mean, we've had a lot of intervention so far. We got my email to you got kind of canceled. My email to Leslie was kind of canceled.
It was delayed. It's like, I guess they had to read it first and check it before they forwarded it.
Right. Yeah. They had to stream it.
I think it's about self-censor. It's about self-censorship. It's because people won't. It's a really crazy time we're living in, right? People are trying to make money and survive. We have half the country living paycheck to paycheck, and of course, you're not just going to say like, "Well, I have to give up this job because I am pro-Palestinian, or I might want to talk about this issue in the future." It's like you probably will just kind of tuck it away and just say, "Look, it's not worth the risk." In case anything happens to me. And that's really dangerous because you see other initiatives being taken like this. Like, for example, I just interviewed a woman named Sue Hare. This is a fucking crazy story, you guys. Her name's Sue Hare Nafal. And she posted when Razan Al-Najjar, that medic, the amazing feminist medic who was sniped dead during the Great March of Return by Israeli snipers, she posted when she died, you know, good versus evil. She juxtaposed a photo of like some random American woman who went and joined the IDF, like just joined a foreign army to subjugate and oppress and kill, not kill, but like subjugate and oppress Palestinians, right? An American. Juxtaposed it with Razan Al-Najjar. She was like, good versus evil. This is crazy that this woman would do this. Anyway, 2 years after she posted that Facebook post, she was slapped with a defamation lawsuit, but not under like American law. An Israeli law firm tried to sue her for defamation under Israeli law. And in Israel, defamation, like in California, defamation is, and I'm sure in most states in the US, defamation is if you slander someone and it hurts their image or like tarnishes their reputation and they can't, you know, it actually damages them. Yeah. In Israel, defamation, the legal like definition of defamation is actually criticism of the state, even if it's true.
Wow. So like a lot of it, those new historians in Israel, which is the historians who reject the Zionist narratives, they got to be, you know, no wonder Benny Morris went right wing.
Oh, yeah.
Right. He had no choice. I mean, he was going to get canceled because.
You can get actually sent to prison for like a year.
Wow.
In Israel, if you are you know, if you are actually found guilty of this. So it is serious shit. And the fact that they tried to set a precedent here in the U.S. to charge an American citizen under Israeli law with defamation, I think really speaks volumes about this is a censorship campaign that is so wide reaching. And it's just so stark. And we saw, you know, an executive order that Trump signed on his way out the door that basically conflated Judaism with anti-Semitism on college campuses, because BDS is so, it's growing so fast and it's so successful. And that is obviously why they are running scared, because they know that they can't keep this up forever. Right. Like they can't, something's got to give.
Yeah, Abby, if I recall correctly, like the big reason these bills start coming is because celebrities, like even non-political celebrities, start getting into BDS, which is kind of like part of the movement, right? You're supposed to make, it's supposed to be a cultural boycott too. And then they start passing these kind of quietly passing these bills while someone like, I don't know if it was Lady Gaga, but it was a couple big pop stars who aren't necessarily the most political people. Once they announced that they were going to Israel, and then people pushed back on it and then they canceled it. And those were some pretty big wins for like grassroots pro-Palestinian people, but then it kind of seems like there was, you know, this pushback legally using the government, and it's just like, how can, you know, kids really, you know, on these college campuses kind of fight that?
Exactly. And it tarnishes their reputation forever. And then they're worried about getting jobs later on. That's what the executive order from Trump did. But you're totally right, Leslie. This was, I think, it really came to a head. And because the Great March of Return was so bad, it was such a bad PR disaster for Israel. Like they couldn't hide these atrocities. And it was just so blatant, right? Because we saw on video, like they can't control the narrative when we see on video people dying and getting tortured and harassed on the daily. And I think at the same time, around the same time, there was this giant meteor festival, like an electronic music festival going on in Tel Aviv or something like that. And you saw Lana Del Rey drop out. You saw Lord actually being pressured to drop out. You saw several high profile musicians leaving because they didn't want to deal with it. And that was a huge, huge disaster. Because Israel paints itself, as you know, like we're a gay haven. Right. They just pinkwash the shit out of themselves.
Yeah,
yeah, totally.
Time, yeah.
And it's like, come here and party and go to the gay clubs and all this stuff and just forget about the fact that we're like ethnically cleansing like millions of people.
You're dancing on top of nightclubs built on top of like demolished Palestinian homes.
Right. Like literally like the graves of ancestors that are, you know, being cleansed.
Olive trees.
And burnt olive trees. I mean...
So these laws were passed,
and it probably did have something to do with that, because Hollywood started to turn against them. Even like Natalie Portman say, like, this is, you know, I can't accept this anymore. I think it was like when Ahed Tamimi was jailed, and like even Sarah Silverman was just like, this is not what I signed on for. Yeah. And those people back in 2014 were like, Hamas is to blame for everything that's going on when Israel massacred 500 kids. So it was a really huge PR shift. The public perception had really dramatically changed. But at the same time, you guys, what's fascinating is like a couple of years ago, I think in 2017 or something, like Hollywood stars like Ashton Kutcher and all these people like host IDF galas and raise like tens of millions of dollars for the IDF here in LA. Which is like, wait a minute. Well, we're already giving them billions of dollars a year. So why are you raising millions of dollars for a apartheid army?
Yeah, really well funded. Yeah.
Yeah, what I kind remember of guilt that news story coming down. Yeah.
I found the lawsuit, by the way, which has the language, if we want to look at it.
Oh, great.
It's fascinating.
Go for it. I wanted to mention,
just because you were mentioned dancing, I was in Japan once, and I was standing next to this guy, and he started talking to me, because he spoke English. You know, English speakers kind of find each other in Japan, and he said, I'm from Israel. And I was like, yeah, I came to see this band because, you know, like, you know, they're one of the few bands who actually will come to Israel, who actually has ever passed through Israel now because of the boycott and stuff.
Oh,
and he wasn't pushing back on it, and the band was actually a small band. Like, it's a band who just goes wherever they ask, you know. I think it was Crystal Castles, so they weren't that huge at the time. Mm-hmm. but it was very interesting because he wasn't like, fuck BDS, fuck the boycott. He was just like, man, it kind of sucks that country has to, like, puts us in this position.
Yeah.
No, for real. For real, dude. And that's exactly what BDS is. You're right. Like, people are kind of under the false impression. They're like, BDS, you want to sanction Israelis and like make them starve? It's like, no, dude, of course not. We're not talking about like depriving people of food and medicine.
We're not talking about what he did in Syria, Venezuela, other countries, you know.
Yeah, we're not talking about like actually starving people to death like our government does on the daily. We're talking about like the cultural isolation.
Yeah, a civilian,
exactly. Yeah. It's like the scientific, political, and cultural boycott of society to culturally like isolate and until something caves.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly how this stuff works. So people are under the false impression. They like, they compare sanctions to like, you know, what people are calling for. And that's not what this is.
Yeah. I used to get a little bit, I was like, it's not really here. It's neither here nor there. But I used to be like, well, it's kind of hypocritical because the United States also then should be BDS'd. But then I was like, okay, no, obviously there's no civilian, there's no like civil society calling for that. If they did, then I would support that.
I would support it.
It would be inconvenient.
I'm like, BDS us. Like, that didn't really catch on.
Yeah, yeah. So I have the lawsuit.
I'm so down.
No, I agree, yeah. Okay, so I have the lawsuit and...
Well, we do have a couple super chats, if you don't mind. Okay. So somebody did ask if you could elaborate on the Trump executive order that was stopping people from getting a job. Abby, sorry, that was a question for you. Let's see. Yeah, it was so from Sandy. Ask Abby to elaborate on what she said about Trump's executive order in relation to people worried about losing getting a job that she mentioned earlier.
Yeah. Hold on. Read the lawsuit language and I'm going to find exactly is because I don't want to get anything wrong.
Yeah. See how this is a no spin zone, guys.
No spin zone. We're checking our facts, unlike the Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. On July 19th, 2019, Georgia Southern University invited Martin to keynote an academic conference on campus. After accepting the invitation, defendant sent Martin a contract that outlined his services, a keynote presentation she would provide in exchange for an honorarium of $1,000. Grifter. The contract also required her to certify that she was, quote, not currently engaged in and agrees for the duration of this agreement to not engage in a boycott of Israel, end quote. Martin emailed in response, quote, as I'm sure you know, a lot of my work advocates the boycott of Israel, and I cannot sign any form promising to not boycott Israel, end quote. And then as a result, not surprisingly, defendants prevented Martin from providing a keynote presentation and receiving the agreed upon honorarium. And then in the aftermath of Martin's refusal to sign the agreement, defendants canceled the academic conference. So it was a whole conference. So it had a ripple effect because it wasn't just this one event. You were the keynote speaker. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole conference fell apart and they actually subpoenaed the communications afterward because like I just got ghosted and I was like, hello, am I still coming? Like what's going on?
Jeez.
Yeah, no, it was crazy. And then like the lawyers subpoenaed the communications and it was like just very obviously they're just like, what should we do? Well, I guess we have to just cancel it because like we don't know what to do. But the executive order was on December 7th, so late last year, total appeasement to the Israeli lobby, basically a conflation of Judaism with anti-Semitism. So targeting BDS activism on campus. It says discrimination against Jews may give rise to a violation of U.S. civil rights law. So it's basically saying like you will violate the law if you discriminate against Jews, meaning that really just meant like Israel. Like, so it's such a wide reaching and crazy generalization. And it's basically just meant to prosecute Palestine Solidarity organizing because you're conflating criticism of Israel with anti-Jewish bigotry, and then that just sticks with you. Like, people aren't going to want to join these actions on campus if they think that that's going to impede their ability to get work. You know, college is like your launching pad to go on to whatever the hell you want to do, and like college campuses is such a hotbed for BDS activism and divestment campaigns that are hugely successful. So it was actually really smart to target college campuses specifically and with this threat. and just say, like, you will essentially be declared like a anti-Semitic bigot.
Right.
And we will make sure that that's like a tarred. You're tarred and feathered with this label. And then, you know, so do you really want to go through that?
Right.
Really, really scary. And that's exactly what happened. And I actually don't know, you know, I'm not sure what has been the effect of that, but I'm sure it's just been another just self-censorship campaign. You know, people are just probably not participating.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, this total, just reading at the Washington Post, and this is back in December of 2019 when this executive order was signed. Joshua Shanus wrote this piece. Last week, President Trump signed an executive order to fight anti-Semitism on college campuses while flanked by two evangelical Christian pastors, Robert Jeffress and John Hagee. Jeffress. Jeffress has literally damned Jews to hell, while Hagee has warned of an international plot led by the Rothschilds to undermine American sovereignty, described Hitler as a hunter sent by God to kill Jews who refused to move to Israel, and described the Antichrist as a half Jew homosexual. He also called him fierce, which is kind of funny. But yeah, this is the perfect image, like the perfect symbol of the like the total pseudo Jewish, you know, whatever allyship. I don't know what the word is. Goyisha allyship or something. That is actually, first of all, a lot of the most, you know, the biggest Christian Zionists are anti-Semites. They want Jews to move back to Israel. And like, I think 400 of us can survive, and the rest of us like burn.
Yeah, eternal damnation.
Eternal damnation. Yeah. And then the other thing is that the irony is that this is, you know, again, Jonathan Chait somehow. I remember he called Ilhan Omar. This is a whole other thing, but you know, there is a trope of dual loyalty, which Omar was not, by the way, talking about. But that is a trope that like Jewish identity is the same thing as Israeli identity, and that you have some allegiance to this foreign government. So even this, even the conflation of Jewishness with a certain position on Israel, that's anti-Semitism. Like BDS is not anti-Semitic. It's actually anti-Semitic to present it as anti-Semitic, which isn't to say there aren't anti-Semites who support BDS and that there aren't people who support BDS, but there are anti-Semites everywhere. And
there's anti-Semites who support Israel.
Right.
Yeah, like,
Just gives fodder to the anti-Semites.
Yeah, it does. You know?
And, and it also like completely distracts away from actual Nazism and fascism that is on the rise, as we know.
Right.
And which the Israeli government seems to not actually give a shit about.
No, because that's why they, like, remember, they, it was so awkward, when Netanyahu was in Poland, and they had, like, passed a law making it, like, illegal to say that, like, Poland had participated. I have to find the exact language, but, like, you couldn't, like, you couldn't single out Poland for its role in the Holocaust.
Yeah, and Netanyahu's own son, I forget his name, but he's a total, like, weird alt-right sympathizer, and he, like, has posted himself, like, anti-Semitic memes about... Wow. It's just like, what is going on? This is so surreal. And did you hear Andrew Yang? What a total...
What did he do?
Oh, my God. His was recently confronted, I think, by Crystal Ball and Kyle Kalinske about his stance on BDS, because, of course, he conflated it with, like,
Nazism, actual Nazism.
Yeah, and he was just like, well, he totally tiptoed around it, and he was just like, well, BDS calls for to abolish the state of Israel, and like, I can't agree with that. And it's like, dude, does South Africa exist today? Like, no one.
Right. I think somehow they made it through.
Like, what are you talking about? Like, that's not. It's just such a gross distortion of what BDS is, and it's disgusting.
Yeah, I have the quote here. I have the quote here.
This is interesting, by the way.
Had the quote from Yang. It's really bizarre because, like, he said this on like Secular Talk, which is a pretty left leaning show, so like it's like he doesn't know his audience, and he just made this really extreme thing. Like, he doesn't even, like, no one is like asking Andrew Yang what he thinks about like Israel Palestine, I think, in general, but this was his answer. It's like, BDS specifically as an organization, as a movement, has refused to disavow extremist elements that have essentially said Israel does not have a right to exist. So that's quite extreme.
Yeah, no one's saying that. They're saying that the Zionist regime shouldn't exist, like, in its current form, because that 5 million Palestinians are not, they don't have democratic rights, dude. Right. Like, hello? Like, how dare you conflate that and distort that and obfuscate the obvious reality? And I know he's pandering because he's running for what, mayor of New York or whatever. Like, it's quite disgusting. I mean, he really, really ripped his mask off there because it's just like, dude, I'm sorry. I don't discriminate when I say, like, I want equal rights, human rights, and democracy for everyone. And if you're just like, oh yeah, I'm liberal and I'm on the left, but like, yeah, Palestinians are Nazis. It's like, no, that
no, they all want to kill us. They all want to push us to the sea.
And the thing is, he's pandering to you, Katie. He's trying to get your vote as a Jewish person living in New York. Yeah. Like this is not appealing to you because Jewish people are not a monolith.
Living in New York,
are not a monolith and aren't all like everyone in BDS is a Nazi. Like, that's just not
right.
Like, so that's not even good pandering.
Right. Yeah. No, it's not good. It's not good at all. And also, you know, I'm going to ready for me to make a real dent in his campaign.
Yeah.
You know what he opposes?
What?
You know what one of his most controversial positions is?
Oh, circumcision.
He's anti.
Oh,
I like
now,
that. That's
now
the only
I'm
thing
fine
I like
with
him.
Anti. I mean, I have a big debate. I'm a firm believer in the fact that it obviously started out for health reasons. I don't know why people can't admit that. It doesn't have to be. It's no longer a health issue in industrialized nations. I'm not anti or pro. I just think that I don't like the comparisons between that and genital mutilation. I say no to that. I think it's ridiculous. Okay. It did start out as a health thing when people were living in desert. You know, I don't know why Christians dropped it. Like, you got the Jews did it. The Christians were like, and Muslims are like, yeah, we're going to bring that. We're going to circle back, circumcision back, circumcise back. But I'm just saying, that.
Yeah, he had a lot of strong words about that. Andrew.
That could alienate you could lose a lot. You're cutting yourself off. You could cut
you're
off
cutting
a lot
yourself.
Of your, I'm sorry. I can't even like, yeah. Don't you're cutting off your something despite your face.
Despite your dick.
Cutting off your foreskin despite your dick. But I shouldn't do that because that's not my problem with him. But I'm just saying, I could imagine a bunch of religious people now getting upset.
It's a fascinating thing that he just went right out of the gate with that, but then he's just like so, you know, tepid in his response
about this.
It's like, says a lot, dude. I mean, it's so disgusting that here we are in 2021 when the UN said by 2020, Gaza will be uninhabitable. So where are we at? They don't have clean water. There's no access to, like, you know, they used to count their calories. Like, everything is patrolled by Israeli officials. And then there's 2 million people living in this open air prison, right? And they don't have freedom. They don't have mobility. And then there's the West Bank, 3 million people living under a brutal martial law. They can't have rallies. They can't participate in political demonstrations. They can't raise a flag legally. Like, this is serious shit, you know? And the fact that Saturday Night Live was like protested and boycotted.
Yeah, we did
a
thing on that. Yeah.
It's just like, what is wrong with you people? Like, honestly, what is wrong with society that you cannot acknowledge this horrific oppression that we are subsidizing with US tax dollars? And that's why it is really, the onus is on us, American citizens. It is our government. Yes, there's horrible stuff going on all over the world. I personally think this is one of the worst human rights catastrophes in the world. And the fact that my government is directly sponsoring it with my tax dollars makes it that more urgent and dire for us to organize and try to link this struggle with all of these other struggles, because it really can be linked. You know, this is a global empire. Imperialism is global. The fact that Israel uses military technology to oppress refugees at the border, like, all of this is connected. Police. Look at the police institutions. Yeah. They're all trained in Israel. The NYPD has a headquarters in Tel Aviv, you know? And so we need to wake up. Like, I don't know how much longer we are going to let this slide, how much longer people like Joe Biden can just unapologetically say, I'm a staunch Zionist. And Kamala Harris actually compares Israeli activism to like the civil rights struggle in Selma. I mean, they are horrible.
Oh, gosh.
You know, on Palestine.
What
it's really
That's
embarrassing.
Awful.
Yeah, it's really, they were probably the worst next to Amy Klobuchar when it came to their, you know, loyalty to Israel. And it's pretty grotesque. I mean, Joe Biden got 100% APAC rating. it's sick. It's just like people are suffering and dying every day, and the land is disappearing, you know, and there is no second state to be had. And the sooner we wake up to that truth, the sooner that we can try to galvanize and organize some sort of movement to hold Israel accountable. The ICC, hopefully something will happen there, because the U.S. government will continue to veto everything that tries to be initiated on a global scale. And our government is just disgusting, everything it does around the world. But this is one of the worst, you know, and people, we can't wait. Like, it's yeah. such an emergency situation, you know. And COVID, I mean, COVID's made it that
oh
much
my
worse.
Gosh.
I get,
yeah.
I'm on a group text with the people that we did Gaza Fights for Freedom
Which
with. And just
so
every
good,
day,
by
it's just like,
I can't recommend enough. Yeah.
Thank you. No, and thank you. We're actually going to release it for free. On response on the anniversary of her death, June 1st. So I hope people check that out on YouTube. It's going to be up. And hopefully our YouTube account doesn't get taken down because of it. Like,
yeah, if it does.
Just like
yeah.
anticipating like anything could happen because of just how awful this is getting. You know,
well,
cancel culture.
Cancel
yes.
culture, yeah. As someone who's been gone after, been censored, and also as someone who you are like distinguishing between cancel culture as it's often described. And, you know, I mean, it is an interesting semantic discussion, which regardless of what your thoughts are, I think what one's thoughts are, I think it does need to be hammered out. But a lot of people with our politics want like support more content moderation and more limits on what can be said on Twitter and different platforms. What's your position on that?
I'm close to a free speech absolutist. I think that it's a huge slippery slope. I mean, because going back to the 2016 DNI report, Katie, because you had me on your show when the Russiagate stuff was really coming full steam. And my show, Breaking the Set, on Russia Today, that ended 2 years before Trump got elected, was wrapped up into this whole Russiagate hysteria and actually blamed in part for Trump's election as part of the Russian disinformation campaign. And I was accused of sowing discord and fomenting radical discontent in this country by simply covering third parties, interviewing Jill Stein, talking about police brutality, covering Occupy Wall Street. This is so dangerous to me. So I was so acutely aware of this that long ago that I knew that this was the beginning of something horrible. It would snowball and spiral out of control. And so I've just kind of seen how awful it's gotten. And I am not surprised because I was on the receiving end of this so long ago, but I am just very alarmed at how many people don't understand how the hammer will always fall down on you. It doesn't matter who you are. If you are an independent content creator and you are simply opposing corporate media narratives, that is construed as fake news. You can be accused of towing the Russian line. We all know this. We've probably been lumped in with like a proper not, you know, some front group that's accusing us of this already. There's that black box algorithm on Hamilton 68 dashboard. There's all these Twitter accounts that already do this, right? Label people as Russian disinformation if you are simply criticizing U.S. foreign policy or going against the mainstream line. And to push these people into like alternate lanes of reality and tiers of the internet where they just don't exist because they offend liberal sensibilities is such a dangerous future. Because what is that going to do to society? What does that do to our collective consciousness? It's like, I fear the future where that's just going to be encouraged and accepted even more, you know, because it's already purged so many people. Like, as I mentioned, I mean, people who are simply like Chavista talking about the Venezuela coup, you know, people who are pro-China. Like, why is Twitter doing the bidding of the U.S. government? Why is it that before there was any laws in place that Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram were acquiescing to the U.S. government and saying, okay, we're going to change our algorithms? And we know what the effect of that was, that Google changed its algorithms back then. And all of these websites are now obsolete. Counterpunch, World Socialist Website, I mean, Project Censored. It's like you have to go to like page 20 on Google search results to even find anything other than like your corporate media narratives. And that's really dangerous for people who are just simply getting introduced to media literacy and a critical media education. Because how do you do that? How do you self-teach these skills if we certainly don't learn them in school? You know, when I was in college, I was able to find out a lot of stuff online, which led me to the trajectory I am today. But like people today, I find it really baffling because they've already censored us to such an extent where they've already curated our reality to such an extreme degree, but we just don't realize it.
Right. Yeah.
And that to me is just as scary as whatever censorship they're bemoaning about China or anything else.
Right. China. Yeah.
China.
Yeah.
China.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, before we even started, there was already somebody saying that we should be, before we even said one word there, people were like, well, you're talking about censorship of Palestinians. Like, why aren't you talking about China? I'm like, you didn't even wait for the show to start, officer.
Yeah.
Officer, yeah. You got to wait for the show to start. Don't put it in the pre-show chat.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, right. You didn't there, know. Actually, officer. And this brings us to the next question I was going to ask. What about China? For all they know, that's coming next, but it's not. We can talk about that another time. But I mean, just to break it down, this is a pretty simple thing, which is that, like, we talk about our own government. Like, this is, I mean, it's not that deep. If I were asked to sign a loyalty oath to China, I'd probably object. Well, I mean, I'd sign a no war with China thing, but yeah.
My brother said this on the last, people should check out Media Roots Radio. It's our podcast, but he said, we are Jeffrey Dahmer on steroids times a million. That is what the U.S. government has done just in the last 20 fucking years.
Right.
How many millions of people's blood is on this government's hands? How many tens of millions of people have been expelled from their homes, maimed, lives destroyed? And you have the fucking audacity to talk about China? To talk about China when you actually know nothing about this country. You are ignorant of their politics, their culture, their economic system. The vast majority of people hammering and harping about China constantly are completely ignorant about what's going on in China, and they don't give a shit about their own government. Look in your own backyard, fix your own backyard, because this government's a genocidal entity that is on that has just total bloodlust, and we need to stop it because I mean, how many countries are under the boot of US empire and imperialism, right? I mean, look at the bases around the world, 700 plus bases, tens of millions of people affected by this. It's just absolutely beyond the pale. A million dead in Iraq alone. Look at Syria, look at Libya. Look at the coups in Latin America. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't stand it. It's like, yes, I wish that I could do something to just wave a magic wand and end all oppression all around the world. But guess what I can do? I'm an American citizen. I'm an empire baby. And what I can do is actually resist my government, because all of the people around the world who are living under the boot of imperialism are looking to us saying, what the hell is wrong with you? Can you please form some sort of movement to stop your government from oppressing me?
But hey, Abby, what if they're actually saying, Americans, can you please, for the love of God, do something about China? Maybe that's what they really want from us. I mean, we're getting all these comments. Maybe they are in these foreign countries and they're saying, actually, what Americans need to do is talk about China. I wonder if they're on Chinese YouTube streams telling them to talk about America or America's involvement in Israel and Palestine, or like it's just so strange that like there's that constant deflection, and people are just very excited about like having a good bad guy to point to, and it seems like because China seems so because we had all those stories maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago about how powerful China is. Now it doesn't feel like racist to talk about China, to slot in China into like the Iraq position or like the Afghanistan position, where you're just saying, or the North Korea position, right? Like, well, you know, when you start saying we need to do something about North Korea, we need to do something about Iraq, most reasonable people will kind of say like, why? Like, well, they're not that big a deal. But when you say China, it's like, well, I've been hearing about China's going to take over the world for the past 20 years economically. So now maybe that is a problem.
Yep. China, Russia, two nuclear armed powers that pose no threat to us whatsoever. But because they are economic competitors with this government, and which has been articulated as such very blatantly by Tony Blinken and all of these other people, the NATO conference that just happened, this is all articulated in their own documentation. It says these are global competitors that need to be dealt with, because we need to impose our global order, right? This is the big deterrent from U.S. hegemony taking over the planet, is China and Russia. It's outrageous. This is what propaganda does. It melts people's brains, and it really just deflects from the problems of your own government. When your government is a mass murdering entity, when your government is illegally occupying dozens of countries, when your government is engaged in warfare, mass murder, and also has Guantanamo Bay still open, that's rectally force-feeding inmates that are innocent. And you actually have the audacity to talk about concentration camps in other countries. It's amazing. It's amazing how well and effective propaganda works, because people will actually conflate the two. And I find it really fascinating when China's the one who's being bombarded with the war games, the threats, the constant propaganda of, you know, U.S. warfare and U.S. domination. And it's just unbelievable. We're in a global pandemic. We need global cooperation. And here we are talking about how China needs to be dealt with. And it's just disgusting that these are the people who are elected to represent us. And we're all just cannon fodder for the capitalists, you know. It's just like, it's unreal. But yeah, it really is just a big old deflection, you know, and that's really what it comes down to. People who are too babyish to deal with how genocidal their own government is, because then it makes the impetus fall on their shoulders where they actually have to do something about it. So it's much easier to just say, well, China.
Right. Yeah.
And if we're not the empire, then China, you know, and they would fall in place, and then they do this and that. It's like, no, that's insane. No one has to be the empire.
Right. Yeah. And I think honestly, it has to be like, a multipolar world is much better than a unipolar world with the U.S. at its head, I would say.
Because, I mean, look,
like you have people competing over, like, you know, the Washington Post is like, well, you know, the U.S. is not going to, the U.S. isn't lobbying the WTO to you know, basically the WTO does not want to give people the generic vaccines for COVID, which is a disgusting thing to do. And, the way that the Washington Post kind of framed it was like, well, if they don't do that, if they don't vaccinate people in developing nations, that leaves the floor open to, you know, authoritarian adversaries. It's like, okay, good, fine. Like, if that is going to be the reason
whatever
that you
gets
want to vaccinate.
Done.
Yeah, exactly. It's like this, the Cold War, I mean, really pushed a lot of Jim Crow, like really pushed Jim Crow, dismantled certain parts of Jim Crow more than anything else. Because of the, you know, having to appeal to appear like anti-racist or not racist, because that was one of the things that, you know, one of the major hypocrisies that the Soviet Union would highlight.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Remember all the corporate media was like peddling all this crazy shit, saying like China is like trying to like propagandize us by sending ventilators and masks and now sharing vaccine information. It's like, what?
Well, then, yeah, keep the propaganda up. Or, you know what, U.S., why don't you step it up and actually, like, treat people?
Meanwhile, the U.S. is just, like, increasing sanctions on all these countries, like, making it harder to get medicine. It's like, what is going on? I mean, the fact that people actually still think this is some sort of beacon of democracy and human rights and therefore are, like, asking the U.S. to intervene and situations like Leslie, like people who are, I don't even believe that they're real for the most part, but like bots being like, come help us, like US, come invade China and like save us. It's like, dude, how can anyone look at the US government? I mean, if you see these global like polls, I don't know how they take these, but like the US is clearly the world's largest threat.
Yes.
Like most of the planet.
Right. Yeah.
And we're just so deeply conditioned and ignorant that we actually like have no idea what's going on, you know? And I mean, as soon as you travel, that's another thing. Americans like don't travel very much. And I know it's a luxury, but like just go, I mean, like get out of your city and like go to urban areas and like talk to people, you know?
Yeah. Like just
stuff. And
yeah. It just does. Like you mentioned the bases, Katie mentioned the bases around the country, around the world. Like no, like Americans just don't think how wild it is that we regularly have conversations about which country are we going to bomb next? Because most countries don't have those conversations. That's not a media cycle in most countries. Do we do Iran? Do we do North Korea? Do we, do you know, Yemen? Like most countries don't have that option. That's just not a thing that like countries don't just decide like, well, it's this country is a threat and we need to go like bomb a few people. Like there's only a handful of countries who live in that state and have that mindset. And Americans like have no concept like that is not normal. Like that is like you're the baddies. You're the baddies. Yeah. if your entire life your country has been at war with multiple countries, which is the case for I think everyone listening to, almost everyone listening to this show, you're the villain. Like you're the problem, not China.
Dude, right. Totally. And then the cause and effect, like a mass influx of refugees, people trying to escape Libya, capsizing on boats, the economic degradation of this country, the fact that we don't have healthcare, we don't have anything, no safety net for people. It's completely eroded because every single cent is squandered into this giant military machine that is perpetrating endless violence around the world. And that is just really fascinating that people do not see this connection and they continue to think that this is somehow necessary. And then China's somehow the problem. It's like, no, we can have nice things. We need to abolish all of these things. You know, like people don't even realize like ICE and the DHS are like new, you know, they just keep expanding.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I just see things like the raves that have been going on in China since last August. This was supposed to be the Chinese virus, but mm-hmm. their country was able to come together, deal with it. And we're still like wiping down our groceries with no real end in sight. We're pretending like it's over, but it's not necessarily going to be over this summer. And it's just like, even if I thought China was going to just take over the world and run over the world, I'd be like, maybe they deserve a turn at it. Like, like they seem to handle this COVID thing fairly well and fairly quickly. Yes, there were some draconian measures put in place for a specific purpose, and then they ended on like the American style, where you put in the where you make people take off their shoes because one guy fails to bomb a plane, and then everybody for the rest of time when they're in America has to take off their shoes when they get off the plane, which you don't have to do in most other countries. You just don't have to do all that the stuff American does. So yeah, I actually think like even the threat of China, I'm like, what, like, don't threaten me with a good time. Like, China's going to take over the world. Like, great. Like, maybe we'll get some shit done and maybe we'll move humanity towards doing something other than just like making luxury condos or something. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's fucking crazy, man. The fact that the only solution to COVID being over is the government just being like, everyone just do your part. Just do your part. It's like, why is it on us though?
Yeah. You
know, like why? It's just like recycling and saving the environment. It's just like, just do your part, drive a Prius
straws.
And and get the right straw. It's like, no, I think that there should be something done on the government's behalf. Like, you know, the military is the largest polluter in the world, the largest contributor to climate change. And maybe you should just ban styrofoam. Like, have you ever thought about fucking that?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we doing here?
Right. It's always charity in this place of justice or regulation.
And so now America is just fucked, exceptionally fucked. We have all these crazy mass phenomena that are just unique to this country, like, you know, opioid epidemic, the mass shooting phenomenon, like all of these things that are just so the gun obsession. Just it's such a there's so many symptoms of the sickness of American society. And it all just bleeds from this like empire baby syndrome of this out of control military industrial complex. I think that there's a mass psychopathy going on, if that's even the word, but it's truly disturbing.
That is the word. Yes.
It's truly disturbing. And so that's where we're at. And every other country seems to be kind of dealing with it in a much more efficient way because we're America and we're exceptional.
Right. Yeah. We are. You see, gotta are you happy? You jingoists out there? Abby Martin just called America exceptional. Yes. She's an American exceptionalist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, yeah, you guys, the BDS stuff. Thank you so much for getting me on about this.
Yes, thank you so much. Yes, come back. Definitely come back.
Yeah, no, I'd love to. I love your show is so great, Katie.
Thank you.
You feature so many critical people and it's really great. You're giving a platform to really good people. Keep it up, you guys. And keep
up the fight. Keep up the
I'll keep you posted on the lawsuit.
People check out
the Empire Files. We're definitely going to be posting updates there, and we'll let you know. I mean, hopefully it gets struck down. And if it, I mean, this is like the most important civil rights issue there is, are these anti-BDS laws that are suppressing free speech and pro-Palestine speech. And we really need to speak up about them and speak out against them. So thank you so much, you guys. You guys rock.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Abby. Thank you.
Cancel culture. Bye.
Bye, cancel culture. You know, and it's true, by the way, let me just say one thing. Well, let me say a couple of things. First of all, let me say thank you for watching the Katie Halper Show. And
Well, if I don't really interrupt you, I want to thank you, Katie, again for having Abby on, because she's just one of my favorite people.
She's great, right?
Thanks again for listening to the Katie Halper Show. To hear me and Leslie and journalist Aaron Mate talk more about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and in particular, AOC's pretty confusing comments about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, you can become Patreon supporters at patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. If you like the show, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And as always, we remind you that this show could not happen without the support of our listeners. Our show is produced by me, Katie Halper, Nick Palm. Brad Bloom is our audio engineer and an associate producer on the show. Our researcher is Joshua Bregman, and our intern is Maria Trujillo. And our theme song is by the band Cordova. See you next time.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.